Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here's one.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's me. 108, we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's warm downtown Chicago. A little bit of milky sunshine, as they call it out there. It's not a real pretty day. I'm looking for some good news in my world. I'll take 80 degrees. But you know, I'm thinking sometimes sports is a good way to sort of distract us from the news of the day. But I'm not loving the sports page these days, I'll be honest with you. I mean, literally on the front page of the Chicago Tribune today, Paul Sullivan is asking the question, do the Cubs suck? That's a quote on the front page of my Tribune. I know we're 19-19, but I still think we're going to be in the World Series this year. It's just not going to be as much fun as you remember last year being. Brad Mielke joins us now from ABC. He is with ABC Radio News, and I just want to catch up on some of the news of the day. Brad, thanks for joining us. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You a Yankees fan, Mets fan, Nationals fan?
I actually come from Southern California, beautiful Orange County, so I worked at Angel Stadium at the ballpark when I was in high school. I was hawking peanuts there.
Nice. Nice. So you're an Angels fan?
Yeah, that's right. Go Halos.
Yeah. Now, how's that working out for you? They're in first place right now. What am I talking about?
They're doing Mike Trout just carries them on his fish-like back every day, but he does his best.
It's pretty amazing how good that guy is right now. What, 5 years in? I mean, that's a lot of fun for those fans.
Hey, it's pretty incredible to watch.
Okay, let's talk about the real news of the day, and that is what is going on in Washington, D.C. There's really two major stories here today, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, well, the big story continues to be this idea that there is a memo out there penned by James Comey in the hours after he met with Donald Trump this past February, in which he says Donald Trump all but asked him to make the General Mike Flynn investigation go away. He said, I hope that this will end. And so the fallout continues, especially for Republicans who have shown themselves to be very kind of antsy here. You've seen some call for more information. A lot of them have called for James Comey to testify. And some, a few, are even starting to throw that phrase special prosecutor around, as some of their Democratic colleagues have been doing for weeks.
All because the president said, can you let this go, right? I mean, that's really what this whole thing hangs on, right?
That's right. And there's still, you know, confusion, of course, over exactly what happened, what was said. We still have not seen this memo yet. We've only talked to sources who have read it themselves. And so, you know, we still have yet to get all the details here. And that's what Congress is asking for. There's also this larger question of the saying, I hope you can let this go. Does that equal obstruction of justice, or is that just a president sort of thinking off the top of his head? Because if it is obstruction of justice, then that's when the I word, impeachment, starts getting tossed around by members of Congress, and we're certainly seeing that already from some Democrats.
They were talking about this on another network today. I was watching the CBS Morning News briefly, and they said with Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's former running mate, he said, well, just wondering that might not be obstruction of justice, but also firing the director of the FBI then becomes an action. So it's not just him, you know, wishing that Comey weren't in the way and wishing that he were more loyal. He also fires Comey. And so then you really do have a case there.
Well, that's right. And we've heard from some conservative legal scholars who have said, listen, the president has the right to fire whomever he wants. And
sure,
frankly, he has the right to tell the FBI sort of what they should be focusing on, since he's the person who the executive branch oversees the FBI. However, when you're talking about a president who is firing the person who might be investigating him or the people around him, and when he is telling that person what they should and should not lay off of, that gets very serious, at least in the eyes of Congress. But as it always is when you talk about, you know, impeachment or any of these more political grounds, that's a political conversation, not necessarily a legal one. All you have to do is get a majority of House members to agree that something's wrong, and that's when the ball really gets rolling there. And you're sort of seeing Republicans all take a look at each other right now and figure out where to go forward. CBS had said they reached out to 20 Senate Republicans, none of them would go on the show this morning.
I noticed.
You also heard that from Fox News last night. I think that gives you a sense of just how nervous Republicans are right now.
Well, John McCain said at a gathering of Republican lawmakers yesterday that it's unconscionable that the president would have hosted those two Russian diplomats, the foreign minister and the ambassador. And as they told it, the crowd of Republicans burst into applause. They agreed with McCain that there's no way that the president should have been hosting those top Russian officials.
Well, and you see some Republicans like John McCain, like Marco Rubio, John Kasich. I mean, these are all sort of familiar names, and they've made a name for themselves in the last several months being critical of the president, Jeff Flake from Arizona. What you have yet to see are you know, Republican leadership members who have been staunchly in the president's corner, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, some of these players who really do control some of the levers of power in Congress. You have yet to see them say, if the president told James Comey to end the Flynn investigation, that would be obstruction of justice, or if he gave classified information to Russian officials, that would show that he was somehow unfit for office. You have yet to see the leadership of the Republican Party bail on him, and that has continued to make this a partisan issue, and that has made President Trump, as we saw in his commencement speech today, really sort of double down and continue to say to his supporters, the media is after me, Democrats are after me, and that puts pressure on these lawmakers because they've got a lot of Trump voters in their districts.
My newsman, Steve Bertrand, is also in on this conversation.
You know, I was surprised the speaker today, not only did he sort of not turn on the president, he seemed to increase his defense of him in some way and even questioned why James Comey didn't reveal this memo back in February. What's your read on where the speaker is specifically here?
Yeah, we've heard this argument from a few people now. Governor Mike Huckabee, former governor from Arkansas and a Trump fan, mentioned this last night as well, was getting quite a bit of traffic in conservative circles. People around the FBI says that doesn't really hold water. This idea that if you're the director at the FBI and the president says something that might be sort of putting pressure on the investigation, that you don't necessarily go out and make that public because that would essentially be weighing in on an ongoing investigation. You would be somehow putting your thumb on the scale on something that your agents have been working on. And you rarely see, as a matter of course, FBI agents or investigators talk about things that are going on with an investigation, good or bad, until the case is shut and until charges are brought. And one of the only times we've seen James Comey weigh in on a case without bringing charges was with Hillary Clinton and her email server.
Sure.
And we see how that worked out for him. Not a lot of fans for doing that.
I think the president's so used to having it his way from the corporate side, from the real estate side, he must be just flummoxed by the fact that what he is saying is not being adhered to, that there's leaks, and that maybe he actually can't say or do some of the things he wants to say and do. I'll bet he's flabbergasted by all of this.
Yeah, I was saying this yesterday, especially when you talk about the Russia story and sort of the idea that you can, as a president, you can declassify whatever you want, but
right.
It certainly has caused a fury among Democrats and some Republicans, this idea that he might have given classified information away. And Maggie Haberman, who is a New York Times reporter who knows Trump better than anyone, she followed him on the campaign, she's been in the New York political game for a long time, she said, look, this is a president who likes to brag that he's got Shaquille O'Neal's shoe in his office. When you go visit his office in Trump Tower, he wants to show you that shoe. Having classified information is now the thing that he has that he could show off when he's in the Oval Office. And I think there is this sense that the president isn't somebody who likes to compartmentalize information, that he is very much, you know, speaks off the top of his head, and that is what is so endearing to his supporters when he speaks. But it's also very frustrating if then you're told you can say this, but you can't say that. You should be talking to this person, but you can't talk to this person.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you cannot fire this person that is causing you headaches.
Or at least you shouldn't. But to be honest with you, the two stories, what happened in his office with the Russian diplomats gives me more concern. I mean, I think it would be remarkable if his comment to Comey, can't you let this go, would be his undoing. I think that's a small crime compared to the recklessness with which he displayed in the White House with those Russian officials. Honestly, if you said weigh the stories, that's the one that gives me more pause.
Well, and that would be an issue for voters to decide, because that really is simply a political issue. Legally, the president can do that if he wants to. The issue is that, of course, it puts allies at risk. Perhaps it might put it might make our law enforcement agencies think that they are less safe and that their sources in the field are less safe. And that is something for voters to deal with come election day. But as for lawmakers, the question is whether all the checks and balances in government are there right now, and that would have to do more with the obstruction charge. But you're right; these are two very serious issues, and they come from two sort of very different areas of thinking here.
Well, Brad, with a straight face, your colleagues asked Sean Spicer yesterday, does the intelligence community sometimes withhold information from the president for fear of how he'll handle it? Think about the implications in that question. They did it with a straight face. He dismissed it. He said, no, that doesn't happen, or I don't know. But I think the very fact that that's a concern for the press corps. Another question they asked, by the way, was, does he read the briefings? Does he know what's going on when he goes into a meeting? Is also stunning just by its implication.
Well, and H.R. McMaster made a point to say, as he left the podium yesterday,
The
president didn't necessarily know where all the information
was. How did
was
he
acquired.
Think that was a good thing to say? What point does that possibly score for him, the president, or the American people, that the president actually didn't know where he got that information? Well, it's in his head somehow. Somebody put it there. Did he just make it up and got lucky, or was in fact somebody telling him, or was he reading? That should be a known fact.
What it read like to me was H.R. McMaster saying, listen, the president has America's best interest at heart. The president is doing this appropriate conversation with Russian officials, trying to explain to them intelligence that will affect Russians, but also Americans, and that he was doing it with that in mind, that his motivations did not have to do
no doubt about
compromising
that.
Anyone in the field. I think that's where he was going, but it made you scratch your head and say, shouldn't the president know where our information is coming from, and if it's too sensitive to share?
That's the carelessness that troubles me. That's why the Russian meeting bothers me a lot more than the February 14th meeting with the former FBI director. If he doesn't know where it came from, then maybe he should keep it to himself. I see this guy as somebody who does like to brag a little bit. So his latest Shaquille O'Neal shoe is his super-duper intelligence. Trump's all about superlatives. And you can just see him gushing in front of these Russians. Oh, yeah, we've got the best intel. And I also believe, like you suggested, that he has America's best interest at heart. Of course he does. Does anybody question that? I mean, he may have right up there with his motivations, his own reputation, skin, fortune, hide, whatever. But of course he's trying to do what's best for the country. The thing is, the game's a lot more difficult than he realizes. He's not playing it well.
Well, and you mentioned, this idea that you had the intelligence apparatus sort of working for you. And it really is built that way. For all of this to funnel to the president and for this leader, the civilian elected leader, to be the arbiter of what is made public, what is not, what's classified, what should be shared with allies. And like you mentioned, the idea that perhaps there are law enforcement officials who think, or intelligence officials who think, well, maybe we should not actually show this to the president, but rather some other members of the government for fear of what might get said. That's an issue, I don't think it's necessarily the first time that a president has confronted this. I think people who have always had, Democrats have had a lot of their issues with the intelligence services too. But it does sort of make you think exactly what this president will hear and what he wants to hear. And we've been hearing about potential staff shakeups in the last several days, and it's going to be interesting to see if there are any big-scale changes going forward with these revelations from earlier this week.
One last thing. ABC News correspondent Brad Mielke is on the line. Did you or Steve, did either of you see or hear anything about this meeting that he had with Comey in February? Somebody told me today that at that meeting where he asked for the FBI director to let it go, he actually began it with asking the FBI director if there's any way that you can jail reporters. I'm sorry, I can't find that in print, but is that understood to be the case?
Yeah, that was in the New York Times report, this idea that was part of the memo, that he sort of kicked off the conversation with asking Comey if he agreed with the idea that perhaps reporters should be jailed for publishing the information they get from leakers within the government. And James Comey, I'd be interested to know what he said in the moment, because in public, under oath, he has said It's never been fully legally tested, this idea that reporters could be jailed for that. But he says he would not agree with it, and that it is the tradition of the United States that you don't jail the people who are putting information out there from the government. That's up for government officials and the people of America to decide.
Well, we do have slander and libel laws. And by the way, slander laws work like this, as I understand it. If I said something bad about you not true about you, if I said something that you did not like and it was not true, that in itself does not constitute slander. The scale is also weighed with, do you have an ability to correct that? So that if you have a large enough platform, and John Williams on WGN Radio says the president is left-handed and you're right-handed, or I say something worse and it's not true, do you have a corrective course? And if so, then really, were you harmed or injured by that? And the president has the largest platform, arguably, of any person on earth. So it's really difficult to slander or harm the president that way. I don't know that he knows that, cares that, or appreciates that fact. But the idea that you would jail reporters for doing their due diligence is stunning to me.
Yeah, and there continues to be this kind of debate on leaks, and we're going to continue to see this sort of play out. And you have members of the intelligence community. James Comey was one of them, who said there is a difference between reporters who get information, they weigh it, and they you know, inform the American people with some sense of context and information. And then he said there's groups like WikiLeaks. He called that more intelligence porn, where you just take whatever is out there and you put it in the public realm for the sake of it being public. You don't care what the context is. You don't care necessarily what people get out of it or whether it's helpful, who it embarrasses or endangers. You just put it out there. And Comey, under oath, drew a very distinct line between those two. So I'd be interested to see what he ended up responding, how he responded to the president in that moment.
Appreciate your thoughts today, Brad. It's nice to talk to you. Let's visit again.
Hey, thank you.
Brad Mielke is with ABC News. Incidentally, he referenced the president's speech at the commencement address for the Coast Guard today. It was actually pretty good. It had some, notes from President Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech. I mean, literally, it sounded like that at points. But he did go off to attack the media. And he was this close to getting it right. You want to hear what the president said in a minute? With all of this conversation, I was thinking that Trump, the musical, is being written before our eyes, even as we speak, or our ears. I would imagine it would go like this. In a meeting with James Comey, the president asks for a favor, right? Back off on the General Flynn investigation, the president would sing, "Let it go." But the FBI director says he must be honest, and then turning to the president says,
"We will not let you go."
But the president implores,
"Let it go."
And the director replies,
"We will not let you go."
The president,
"Let it go."
The director,
"We will not let you go."
Trump,
"Let it go."
Comey,
"We will not let you go."
Trump,
"Let him go."
Out comes the whole Congress. Paul Ryan,
"Mamma mia, mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me."
Tell me you can't see it.
For me.
They're all walking onto the stage, and then cue the guitar. They're all bobbing their heads. It's Trump the musical.
Hair is flying around.
I know, and they're all, well, such is the hair that they have. By the way, Steve.
Mr. Jaws.
In this studio I'm in just now?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that Siri? Is that Siri talking to you?
Why do I hear something that I shouldn't be hearing?
Uh-huh.
And I've got so many monitors, I wasn't sure which. And I've got like 9 clickers here. I wasn't sure which one to.
Was it Siri? No, that happens to me sometimes. She'll start.
We would deserve that. No, it's my laptop.
Oh.
Brad Mielke, a moment ago, mentioned the president's speech at Coast Guard commencement address. And this is part of the president speaking.
"Now I want to take this opportunity to give you some advice. Over the course of your life, you will find that things are not always fair. You will find that things happen to you that you do not deserve, and that are not always warranted. But you have to put your head down and fight, fight, fight. Never, ever, ever give up. Things will work out just fine. Look at the way I've been treated lately, especially by the media. No politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly. You can't let them get you down. You can't let the critics and the naysayers get in the way of your dreams. I guess that's why I won. Thank you. I guess that's why we won.
Everything goes back to the election. Everything goes back to him winning the election.
Johnny Boy, you cover a lot about Thomas Jefferson's era, right? Things like that?
Sure, I know a little bit about him.
How did the media treat their presidents then?
It was really bad. I mean, the stuff they said then, you do not hear and see today. I mean, they called them... I actually can't use some of the words. Well, I would argue that maybe the president has a point, Steve, that maybe no president has ever been treated so badly, but that doesn't mean it's unfair. It doesn't mean that he didn't bring it on himself.
Well, I think badly implies unfair.
Well, I wrote the speech.
He might have had rough sledding, but it might not be altogether unfair either.
Don't you think, though, Donald Trump standing there saying, listen, times can be tough, but you got to keep your head down and keep working through it, is a message that everybody gets, and he doesn't need to remind us that he won the election in order to make that point. It would be kind of powerful if he hadn't. I edited his speech. This is part two. Tell me if you've got it ready, Aleph. It's only about 30 seconds, but if you took what he just said and edited himself out of it, the speech would sound like this.
Now I want to take this opportunity to give you some advice. Over the course of your life, you will find that things are not always fair. You will find that things happen to you that you do not deserve and that are not always warranted. But you have to put your head down and fight, fight, fight. Never, ever, ever give up. Things will work out just fine. You can't let them get you down. You can't let the critics and the naysayers get in the way of your dreams. Adversity makes you stronger. Don't give in, don't back down, and never stop doing what you know is right.
That to me sounds a little bit like Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech. You know, never quit, the critics don't count, that sort of thing. And everybody would have gotten what he meant. I mean, we know who's speaking and what he's going through. It would have been so powerful if he had done it that way, rather than Easter egg hunting the thing all the way back to himself again. This is Sean Williams. By the way, the news Steve just did was sponsored by ShopTheGreatEscape.com. Incidentally, one quick note about the weather. So last night and the night before, both nights this week, I walked down to the river and then went up and down the river walk that they now have.
Nice, huh?
And they've got the wine bar, and they've got a place called Tiny, which serves cocktails, wine, spirits, beer, that sort of thing. Both of them serve some food. Then there's another O'Brien's down there, which is kind of a full-service restaurant bar scene. It's packed. It's busy. It's pretty. It so works the way I would imagine the people that designed that had hoped that it would work. People are going there, and they're doing it. And it was just positively delightful. And you sit there and you look across the river up at the skyline, and it's just such a wonderful experience. You wonder why it took the city so long to better develop the riverfront.
Right. I think the rats had a lease on it for 150 years.
And they really did.
They renegotiated, and the city took it back.
Here is Mark Brown's piece in the Sun-Times yesterday. And this is something the Sun-Times has written about before. We brought it up, and it has to do with J.B. Pritzker's mansions. The opening paragraph goes like this. I would love to know why J.B. Pritzker paid $3.65 million in 2007 to buy the Gold Coast mansion next door to his own and then allowed it to fall into such disrepair that he now claims it is uninhabitable. Maybe it started out as a security measure, as his campaign has suggested, with the Pritzkers wanting to create a buffer between their home and the neighbors. Maybe he and his wife started to remodel the property and the cost got out of hand, so they decided to shut it down until they came up with a new plan. The more I thought about it, though, I realized that maybe it's none of our business. Just because a rich guy runs for public office does not require him to explain every strange rich guy decision he's made. Governor Bruce Rauner owning 9 homes being a case in point. What is our business is that one of the wealthiest people in America was allowed to receive a real estate tax break on an extremely valuable home on one of the city's most exclusive streets on the basis that he ran the property into the ground. That makes no sense. I'm sure since you wrote that, Mark, the governor has called you, or rather Mr. Pritzker's called you to give you a full explanation of what happened there.
You know, I really wish he would. I really wish he would. I think there probably is some explanation that doesn't make him look quite as bad as he looks right now. But no, the phone has not rang.
Maybe you should put your phone number. You've just got your email address at the bottom of the... I don't know if he's
They know
in.
Where to find me, and I specifically remember him telling me one time if I needed anything to reach out. So, you know,
I need something here.
I'm disappointed, honestly. I'm not against J.B. Pritzker. I look forward to his entry into this race and to see what he'd do, but...
I'm not against him either. I really don't know much about him. I just know he's that rich guy. I've seen the commercials now, and I know a teeny tiny bit about him. So I really think I'm a blank slate for him as well, and it could be favorable at the end of the day. Isn't it possible, though, that rich people don't like to pay taxes any more than middle Americans do? And even though they can afford it, it must smack you in the face at some point that you're property taxes, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you want to do something to reduce that. So them trying to do something to reduce their property taxes is not curious, right? That's natural.
True.
But it doesn't answer the question of why did they let this mansion fall into such disrepair? I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. And do I understand correctly? He's got one mansion that he lives in, and then he bought the other mansion for $3.65 million. That's the other mansion next to the one he's living in that is in disrepair, right?
His home is much larger. It's like 2.5 times as large, at least just from looking at it from the street. It's quite the place. And then the place next door came on the market, and for whatever reason, he decided to buy it. They say sort of obliquely that it's for security reasons. So, I don't even know what that exactly means, except, you know, if the place is right on, you know, there's not a foot between the houses, and that there's windows, and I have no idea. They just wanted a little privacy.
I have a theory that the guy on the other side of that new mansion that he bought, he must not like that guy. So he's got a buffer zone now that he can control.
I don't think so. I think he was just worried about who would move in there and whether they'd want to put up with him. I guess the place on the other side hasn't come on the market, or their friends. I don't know what that means.
But didn't you also, well, it wasn't your column, but first that alerted us to this. It was the article that preceded that, and that is still the county had to agree to sort of this tax reduction for them, right? And the county didn't have an inspector go in and actually look at it. Rather, they used pictures that were sent to them by a friend of the Pritzkers or something like that.
No. I think that's been confused a little bit. And again, the story was broken by our great watchdog reporter, Tim Novak, over the weekend. And I believe that the fact is that Pritzkers, you know, they also got a tax reduction on their main home.
Oh yeah, right.
And
okay.
They wouldn't allow anybody to come into their home.
Okay, but then
I do believe that they were allowed, that the county assessor's office was able to get into the property in question here, the next door one.
But
I say that out loud. I'm confused myself. But I know somebody got in there. There was somebody was able to get in there and take a look.
Okay, but
Novak's
story the other day reads in part like this. The assessor based, and this may be on the first house, the big one, the assessor based his decision, for which they also received a tax break. The assessor based his decision on an appraisal done by a company hired by the billionaire who refused to let the appraisers inside the home out of concerns for the security of his family. And Berrios agreed to keep the lowered assessment on both homes in place again this year. I know people who have tried to get their property taxes reduced, and it's a lot harder than that for them. I mean, that's just amazing to me.
No.
We're not going to beat him up for that. That seemed to me to be something that's...
You don't come out to your house to check your house, I mean, as a rule. I mean, no. And again, that paragraph does, in Tim's story, does refer to the main house. It doesn't refer to the...
Well, even then. I mean, maybe I'm... I shouldn't be conflating the two, but I'm kind of interested generally in the fact that I know plenty of people who've had trouble getting their property taxes reduced, and it's not so easy, either because you let the house fall into disrepair, quote unquote, or because you, out of property safety concerns for your own main house, you decided that you don't want appraisers to come in there, and you'll send pictures to somebody, and your property taxes go down. It just, I don't know, I thought it was more complicated than that.
Well, I don't think that as a rule that either the assessor or the board of review come out and look at your house when they're deciding to determine whether or not your assessment should be lower.
Yeah. Right. Well. So
they go off of the information that they have.
It's public.
So that part's. I mean, it was very weird to me that he wouldn't let his own appraiser into the building. That's just weird.
Well, let me do this, Michael. You wanted to jump in here and say something. Maybe I'm. I don't understand this, Michael. You're on the air. Hi.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I've had a number of houses appraised, reappraised for tax reasons. First of all, no appraiser is allowed inside your home. They only appraise the value in terms of size, land mass, things of that nature.
I see.
And the community that you live in. No one should ever insist that you have let an appraiser into your home. What you have inside your house is your own personal belongings and to your value, to your pleasing. No one else's. That's one. Two, let me assure you the Pritzkers will get it. And not just because of the name, but I guarantee you if you look a little further, he's going to be using the Madigan firm.
He didn't use the Madigan firm. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. John, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. He's not using the Madigan firm?
He's not using the Madigan firm. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
I said, excuse me, do you know if he is that for certain that he's not?
He's not. No, it's right in the story. It's right in the story.
I'm sorry. I didn't read the story.
There and it gets me irritated.
Okay, so what's the matter, Mark?
They didn't use the Madigan firm. He's wrong. That's not true. He didn't use the Madigan firm.
Fair enough. I appreciate you calling in, Michael. Thank you for joining us. What's the bottom line in this story, Mark?
Well, the bottom line to me is that he got a tax break that he didn't deserve, and that he needs to step up and acknowledge it, and whether he pays the money back or says does something else to. To note it, I don't think there was any collusion here. I don't think it was nefarious. I think it's just our bad property tax system. He was allowed to take advantage of it.
Yeah. So last question, do you think there will be political ramifications for him on this?
I do, simply because I think the Republicans, they latched right onto this. Rauner's people are just... they're digging in hard, and I think that they do want to push it into the whole motif that they have created of Mike Madigan, Joe Berrios, crooked property taxes. That's why your property taxes are so high.
Yeah, sort of plays into that.
Somebody else taking advantage of it. Yeah. So they're gonna paint it with that in that portrait, and which is why I'm very sorry that I interrupted your caller.
All right, I understand
so impolitely. but that was why I jumped in. I mean, it's not exactly where people are taking it, but the story does speak for itself, I think.
We'll keep reading you in the Sun-Times. Nice to talk to you this afternoon, Mark.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Mark Brown, for jumping in on us with us. We'll do the news here at the top of the hour. Steve Bertrand will join us. One other thing about what's going on in Washington, D.C. today. Aaron Blake, the Washington correspondent at Washington Post, will say hi to us later in the 2 o'clock hour. We may also visit with a local former federal prosecutor to get a definition of what obstruction of justice is. Can really that sentence cost you? Ms. Prosecutor, we'll get to that in a little bit.
I think what Brad Mielke was saying is if it's an impeachment issue, it's whatever the House members say it is, right? They're not having to meet a standard of law. It's a political question, and they can say that it is, or they can say that it wasn't.
I've had more than a few people remind me of that lately, that impeachment really isn't so much a legal process as a political one. And I don't know what high crimes and misdemeanors necessarily are, but it sounds vague enough to me that if they want to impeach you, they can. We'll see how that goes. It's 1:57. By the way, I don't have time to get into this now, Steve, but I'll just mention this in passing and then I'll rant about it later on. I called Comcast yesterday. They're my cable provider.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going over my bill and I'm discontinuing some services and moving service. And the guy goes, "Wow, your bill's pretty high." And I said, "Yes." And then he said, "Let's check your records here." And he said, "Oh, you haven't contacted us since 2015. The packages are better now. You could have been saving money." And I said, "So I need to be in the habit of just calling you guys every now and again and seeing if I can get a better rate?" And I don't know exactly what he did on the other end, but I think he shrugged.
Well, they're not going to call and offer it to you.
I know that, but 2015 wasn't like 1973. So within the last couple of years, I signed up for Comcast. I got service. I'm watching TV, clicking around, having things my way and paying more than I want. But that's the way life goes sometimes. And then he's like, "Dude, you let this thing sit for 18, 24 months as though that were my bad." I guess it was, but I'm just not in the habit of calling Comcast every 6 months or 6 weeks and going, "Hey, what else have you got?" But that's kind of what I came away with there.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
84.
Here's John Williams.
What was I thinking? It's 2:12. Thank you, Steve. This is John Williams. We're here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Lord have mercy.
All the way until 3 o'clock. It's just a little two-hour show, and one topic continues to come up again and again. It's what's going on in Washington, D.C. And while we'll touch on that in this half hour, we also wanted to talk about the Chicago police announcing a new policy on the use of force. Both of those topics we can touch on with Lori Lightfoot, the former federal prosecutor. I had questions for her about charges that the president could face, but also she's the president of the Chicago Police Board and was at that announcement earlier today. Lori, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good, John. Happy to be on your program.
Let's talk about the use of force by the police and these new rules of engagement. So what's changed now?
Well, I think first that what we've got to cite is the process by which the department got to this new policy, which was really unprecedented and I think really augurs towards a much more transparent and inclusive process. As you may recall, the department put out its use of force redraft last fall. Gave the public 45 days to weigh in and make comments, and they got a significant amount of feedback, not only from members of the general public, but from individual officers, and they conducted focus groups, and then integrated that feedback into a redraft of the department of the policy, which they put out again in mid-January, opened it up for even more comments, and then led to this final policy. That's historic in Chicago. I can't think of another time in my 30 years being here where the police department has undergone a major revision in such a core policy like use of force, and they have engaged in the kind of outreach and transparency that has happened under Superintendent Johnson with this particular use of force policy.
Got it.
For that alone, they should be commended.
I still need to know what the difference is like on the street. Does this make it maybe more difficult for or gives the cops a little more pause if they use physical force or their weapons?
I don't think so. I think the training is going to be critically important, and they're going to put every single member of the department through a four-hour training course that will go on beginning now through the early fall. That training, I think, is going to be critically important to highlight the differences between the old use of force policy and to really start them thinking about ways in which they can better engage the public to de-escalate circumstances and, frankly, protect themselves from
any kind of injury
or harm.
Well, I think really, that idea of de-escalation is good. I think every police force in America needs to understand it. And by the way, if the cops are angry or if they are using force, because sometimes that's just the way their job has to be done, I think we all need to respect or almost appreciate that. It's a very difficult job to do. But by the same token, that seems to have too often been the only tool in their chest. And there are times where, if instead of using volume or whatever, they would just chill the whole thing out, that would go better for them, too.
Well, I think that's right. And you know, what we have, I've consistently heard from officers that I know or people that officers that approach me at different events is that they want training. They want to know where the lines are being drawn and they want to be supported when they're doing their job every day. You hit the nail on the head. They have a very, very difficult job. And in the millions of encounters that police have every year with members of the public, we want to make sure that they have the right training, the right tools to use to make sure that those encounters are safe for everybody involved. And that, frankly, members of the public have confidence in our police department.
Can you give me just one example, though? Like, imagine a scenario on the street where an officer is going to use the new rules versus the old method.
Well, let me focus on the topic that we talked about, which is de-escalation. Officers have already gone through de-escalation. They'll get more of that training. But they have to recognize that the way in which they conduct themselves, the way in which they, the words that they use, the tone that they use, the volume that they use, all of that adds to whether or not that's a circumstance that's going to end peacefully or whether or not there's going to be force that's necessary. So emphasizing using the time and distance techniques of de-escalation, I think is going to be critically important. And hopefully will be a difference maker. I mean, what we have to do and what the department has to do is once they've gone through the training and the policy goes live, they need to measure whether or not the encounters between officers and the public are ending up in a situation where both parties leave feeling like they've accomplished what they need to accomplish in a way that is respectful.
I can imagine some officers don't like the fact that you're asking them to mamby-pamby people that are either breaking the law or at least not cooperating.
Well, we're not asking them to basically go soft on what they do. Every circumstance is going to be unique. Every circumstance is going to require different kinds of skills and tools to make sure that they get people compliant and that they fulfill their responsibility. But that's the point. Every situation is different. And to make sure that you understand how this situation might be different from one that you just had or one that you might have in the future, you have to have the right policy and you have to have the right training and the right tools to be able to do that. And I think the policy that's been announced today gives very much clear guidance for individual officers, but that's got to then be reinforced with the training. We're not saying to officers, look, if somebody's out there and is engaging in violent or threatening conduct that's out there in the street, that requires a different level of force. But if somebody is in a near traffic situation, that doesn't require, you know, guns and sirens. So understanding how to differentiate between the extremes of encounters and everything else in between is what this policy is intended to address. Hmm.
Different topic. Now, you are a former federal prosecutor, correct?
Yes, I am.
So we've just been reading a little bit about what Donald Trump said or may not have said to James Comey in a meeting some time ago, and we're all trying to figure out what constitutes either a criminal offense or maybe obstruction of justice. What's your read on the president if, in fact, he asked James Comey to go easy on the General Flynn investigation?
Well, look, I think we don't know enough of the facts, and that's what the committees are duly charged to investigate. And I've heard reports from the Senate committee in particular that they're going to be asking those tough questions. I think it's a little premature to be talking about obstruction of justice or what sanctions might befall anyone before we really know what the facts. I think we need to hear from James Comey. I think we need to look at those that apparently it's called a 302. What the 302 says that memorialized his contemporaneous discussion with the president. I think we need to understand from his perspective, what his takeaway was. You know, people can say and do all sorts of things, but we need to understand the context and the circumstances, and we don't know that yet. We know a little bit of the facts, but we haven't heard from the two people that were involved in the conversation. So I think, you know, certainly my training as a former federal prosecutor, my lawyer's training tell me we need to get to the facts first before we start making judgments and pronouncements about what the next step should be. And we're just not there yet.
Well, that sounds like sound advice. Can you tell me, though, what obstruction of justice is?
Well, it's an intent to thwart. First, you have to have knowledge that there's an investigation going on. You have to do something affirmative to try to thwart that investigation and instruct its ability to get to the facts, to get to the truth. It's intentionally a high threshold. It's not a casual conversation. It's not a I wish. It's an intent, a specific act or omission that is intended to undermine the progress or the integrity in an investigation. And it should be a high threshold. And again, we don't know what the facts are. So talking about obstruction, I think it's premature because we just don't know enough of the details yet.
I understand that, Lori. But, you know, as you describe this sort of definition of obstruction of justice, most people listening to you were ticking off the points as they understand it in this news story. And when you said action, they said fire James Comey. So that was the action. And then there was maybe his expressed intent, if that memo by the former FBI director is true. And again, I want you to know, I appreciate what you said about none of us being there and better that we wait until all of the details come out. But I'm trying to get an operating knowledge here of what obstruction of justice is. And what you've described, I think, fits the narrative people are at least hearing in the news so far.
Look, the facts that have been reported about the circumstances that led to the termination of Director Comey, the new revelations that have come out this week, there's no question that those are troubling. And I think that the American public should demand specific answers. And I think that that's happening. We have mechanisms set up. Both of the committees in the House and the Senate are going to look at these issues. And I think if they don't, they won't have any credibility. And I think that certainly there will be appropriate ways in which there's got to be accountability about what's happened. Our institutions of government, and particularly the FBI and the Department of Justice, have to be independent. They absolutely have to be outside of, above the political fray, and they cannot be unduly influenced by anyone's agenda other than getting to the truth and making sure that we're doing justice. If those are compromised in any way, it undermines the integrity of the entire judicial system at every level, or justice system, I should say, at every level. What's happened, at least as it's been reported, is very troubling. And we need to make sure that the FBI is totally independent, that these investigations go forward in an unfettered way, and that they follow the facts where the facts lead.
Last question. What would your advice be to the president today?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm in the right position to give advice to the president, but I think that the rule of law is critically important in our country. There's got to be respect for the rule of law. And I think that the president and his team would be well served to stay out of the fray, let these investigations take their course, and let the chips fall where they may. But the public, you know, the public expects that the president is going to be focused on the most critical issues confronting us, the economy, jobs, infrastructure, keeping Americans safe. And that's what, if I were asked to give advice, I'd say focus on that, because those are the things that people want change on. The rest of this situation regarding the Russia investigation, and what's been lost in the fray is, there's the intelligence community, I think, is uniform in saying that the Russians tried to interfere with a core part of our democracy. Aside from all the politics, we got to focus on that. That is something that's unacceptable. then, and we've got to get to the bottom of it. We've got to find out specifically what was done, and then we've got to take appropriate action to send a very clear message to the Russians that they cannot interfere with our core elements of our democracy, and that if they dare to do so, that there would be serious consequences to follow. And in all the politics, that central focus, which should be the central focus of the investigation, seems to get lost. And I think that's a problem. We got to get back to that focus.
Lori Lightfoot's a former federal prosecutor, can you tell? And also current president of the Chicago Police Board. Well done, Lori. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's 224. This is WGN. All along, I've been saying that one thing that is sort of staying us is the fact that the markets have been pretty good. So if you've got a 401k or a pension or some sort of retirement savings and it's invested in the markets, that generally, despite all of this, things have been going well. In fact, the Dow's up 5% since Donald Trump got elected. And I think that buys him time. Imagine if things were going as badly financially as they are politically, how that would change your appetite for some sort of change one way or another here. But you're like, okay, I can survive this. But if the markets start to react in a way that is as bad as the politics of this, then I think you're going to see people getting very angry at their congressmen when they come home. Really angry at their congressmen when they come home. Dow's down 330 points. And they say it is amid or amidst, which one is it, Steve, amid or amidst the turmoil in Washington? It's funny because I think what that means, though, is, look, the reason the markets have been pretty good is because Donald Trump is trying to streamline the tax policy and reduce taxes. Corporations love that. And so the market's been sort of up as a result of that. Maybe other factors, too, but that sure didn't hurt.
Well, that's why they think it's weathered so much, because business would like so much what they're Republicans are going to try to do. They're like, okay, we can deal with this, we can deal with that. Sunny days are ahead.
I got that.
And now they're thinking maybe the sunny days aren't going to be quite as sunny.
I'm not exactly sure what that means, because all of this turmoil notwithstanding, Donald Trump's still going to try and pass that policy. Maybe he's got so little equity now in the Congress that he won't be able to do the things he wants to do. Another scenario is that he's not going to be president for 4 years. If that's a possibility, though, you got Mike Pence. If you want a conservative in the White House, there's your conservative.
Right. I mean, if you want someone who can go hand in glove
with the Republican Congress,
yeah, would be the vice president.
Once upon a time, people used to say, boy, Donald Trump scares me, but Mike Pence terrifies me, because he's kind of an ideologue like that. Now it's the other way around.
It's changed, hasn't it?
It totally has.
Yeah.
Trump is just like cuckoo bananas. He's cuckoo like you don't even know what kind of cuckoo he is. At least you know what Mike Pence is. And I'm sorry if you're a Pence fan, because I think if you want a very conservative person who's predictable in the White House, he's your guy, right? Some people go, that's too much for me, that's nuts. But that's okay. At least he's predictable, he's sane, he's rational, he's intelligent, he knows how to work with the Congress. That's your Mike Pence.
Well, we were kind of laughing in here today because, I mean, this is way ahead of ourselves, but should the president leave for one reason or another, you would have, the result would be probably the most biblically driven president ushered in by one of the least.
An evangelical, right? Catholic.
Is he Catholic? Yeah, too. I mean, and you know, he was the one who brought the religious freedom laws to Indiana.
You bet.
He's a very, very conservative guy. But you've got, you know, liberals or progressives or middle of the road people who might not like that at all. But who are so bothered by the president that they'd take that trade.
Two of my friends who are not Jewish, but are very conservative Christian pastors, voted for Donald Trump. And I said, why? And they said, because of his stance on Israel and the moving of the capital there, or the embassy there. Right, Steve, the embassy.
Yeah.
And I said, no kidding, that matters to you. And they said, to conservative Christians, it matters very much. I said, wow, I didn't know that. But they say it did. That measured their vote.
Right. Did you ask them what that has to do with their actual religion and faith? That's what's hard for me to grasp, because I know that's there, but why a minister would feel closer to God based on where a government office is in Israel is, I don't get where those two get married.
Really matters to them.
I know.
Here it is. Five faith facts about Mike Pence, a quote, born again evangelical Catholic. I'm not even sure what that is. By the way, I want to play for you a soundbite. goes back several days, but we're just so focused on these evolving news stories out of Washington, we didn't even get a chance to play for you what Miss USA said when asked one of those ridiculous questions on stage. So here it comes. Lose the music, Ella, and get ready for this now. This is Miss USA. She is from Washington, D.C., and she won. And she's a lovely gal, and I believe she's like a rocket scientist. Like, really, she's very smart. I think her politics are a little conservative, but I don't think that matters here. She is being asked the question, is health care, should health care be a right or a privilege, or is it a right or a privilege in America? Think about that. You're standing there, you're in high heels, you're breathlessly trying to hear the question. You don't want to say some people don't have maps, so you just want to sort of land this and not wobble too much. Is health care a right or a privilege?
I'm definitely going to say it's a privilege. As a government employee, I am granted health care. And I see firsthand that for one, to have health care, you need to have jobs. So therefore, we need to continue to cultivate this environment that we're given the opportunity to have health care as well as jobs to all the American citizens worldwide.
So it was a little mappy, but I'm not exactly sure what she said there, but she said it's a privilege. And now, of course, Twitter is beating her up for that because it should be so right afforded to all Americans equally. It shouldn't be a privilege for a few. I don't think she said anything wrong there. Do you?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, no. It's like, are they running? Is it a beauty contest or a political debate?
Exactly. It's a beauty. Well, if you say it's a beauty contest, you get in trouble.
I don't care.
The Miss USA pageant.
Her answer was as cogent as a lot of first-time politicians trying to explain it.
Really, they should do that to all incoming congressmen. They stand them there,
put them
bright
in a swimsuit.
In a swimsuit and heels, and then play that music underneath. Right. It's sort of like anticipating at any moment you could fall. It's danger music underneath.
Maybe a little fan to create a breeze.
Here's her answer again. Play one more time, Ella. This is Miss USA when asked if health care is a right or a privilege.
I'm definitely going to say it's a privilege. As a government employee, I am granted health care. And I see firsthand that for one, to have health care, you need to have jobs. So therefore, we need to continue to cultivate this environment that we're given the opportunity to have health care as well as jobs to all the American citizens worldwide.
And then you just throw in all American citizens worldwide.
You can hear her smiling.
Children, because she started to hear the applause.
Right.
It's like, ooh, that's a question fraught with peril, but the crowd was sort of picking her up there. And she's like, and all Americans worldwide, children don't have cancer. Get them some maps. Woohoo. And it worked. And I'm like, you go, girl. I'm not exactly sure what you said, because when asked if healthcare is a right or a privilege, she said that we should do something to get everybody good jobs. And in a way, that's almost as right an answer as anything. If everybody has good jobs, then we'll all have good health care.
I think it's kind of a stupid question. Right? It's neither right now.
Well, all right, Steve, I don't have any danger music for you. Steve Bertrand, you get 10 seconds.
No.
Right or a privilege in 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, it's not written into our Constitution that it is a guaranteed right. So it's not a right. Some people say it should. It's not right now. Is it a privilege? It's something that you earn as a worker. It's part of your compensation, right? When you go to do a job, it's not a privilege. You're earning it.
The question totally begs the following answer. Is healthcare a right or a privilege? It's a right. Everybody in America should have equal access to great healthcare coverage. It shouldn't be determined by the color of your skin or the amount of money in your bank account. Whoa! Final answer. Drop the mic.
You're saying it should be a right.
Well, wasn't that the question?
No, you said, what is it? It is not a right right now.
Yeah, well, it should be. And I just think that's the answer they wanted. And she didn't give that.
Where's
she went
from?
With privilege. Washington, D.C. I suppose she's a Maryland native. And she works for the federal government. And I think she's a great representative for all of us. It's 2:45. Aaron Blake is the Washington correspondent at Washington Post. I have one question for him about what's going on in Washington, D.C. today. We'll get to that in a minute. We've been talking a lot about President Trump for obvious reasons today. I like to think that even as we sit here, Trump the Musical is being written. I would imagine it would go like this.
Let it go.
But the FBI director says he must be honest. And then turning to the president says,
"We will not let you go."
But the president implores,
"Let it go."
And the director replies,
"We will not let you go."
The president,
"Let it go."
The director,
"We will not let you go."
Trump,
"Let it go."
Comey,
"We will not let you go."
Trump,
"Let him go."
Out comes the whole Congress. Paul Ryan.
Mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me. For me.
Then the whole Congress comes out and they start singing and rocking out for your entertainment. It's 2:51. See, before I go to Aaron Blake, you need to jump in here.
I just want to let you know, as we get closer to the close now, the Dow, which had made recoveries, overstating it, but had been up and going up a little bit, and now is racing downward as we get closer to the closing bell. It is down 353 points, and that number has now 355, so continues to go down as we get closer to the end of the day.
Aaron Blake is not a financial reporter for Washington Post, but he does do a thing called The Fix. Aaron, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good. Apparently it might be time to check my 401k and see how that's doing right now.
You know what?
Now.
Actually, this is not the time to check your 401k. But it does appear as though Wall Street is sort of reacting finally to the unrest in Washington, D.C. I wonder if that's another, as John McCain would say, shoe that's about to fall.
You know, it could be. I actually just wrote a piece that went up on The Fix at the Washington Post about how, you know, I think there's the sense that the Republican Party in the Republicans in Congress suddenly may ditch Trump once the party's base deserts him, once the Republicans who voted for him get tired of Trump. I think it could actually be kind of when their agenda starts to look a little bit hopeless. And I think we may be getting to that point. I'm not sure how you can talk about really doing tax reform and a health care bill right now, when there's so many distractions going on and so many questions about this administration. And maybe the Wall Street is starting to see that. Maybe they're not quite so keen on tax reform actually happening, those big tax cuts going through. So maybe there's a little something to that at this point.
Do you think the discussion about ending the president's term early is premature?
Yeah, I mean, I can't predict anything like that. I will say he's got really serious problems. I mean, these are things that Republicans in Congress aren't even really seeking to defend right now. In a lot of ways, the White House isn't really defending them. They're just saying that they're not true. I think that it's getting to the point where the White House just is kind of, the staff is tired of it. Members of Congress are tired of it. There's no good defense for the things that have come out in the last week here. I think there are real concerns about what these Comey memos may eventually show. And Republicans have to make a decision right now whether this is a train they want to keep riding or if they think it's just not going to go anywhere.
Comey is going to testify, right?
I think all indications are that he will. The question is whether the White House will assert some kind of a privilege about what he says. We'll try to say that his conversations with the president were supposed to be confidential. We may well see that from the Justice Department. We're not sure what form that would take, but there's really nothing to stop him from testifying as a former FBI director, if in fact that's something he's inclined to do. And it sounds like he's very much inclined to do it.
Well, I could see him invoking some language that would say, "I'm sorry, I can't answer that, Senator. I'm sorry, I can't answer that, Senator." I could get that because of national security. But you do think that he does want to say what happened in that February meeting, don't you?
I think that, you know, I think he'd like to get his side out there if he can do it in an acceptable and legal way. I mean, the president of the United States basically threatened him last week with tapes of their conversations. You know, the New York Times report yesterday about Flynn, about Trump having asked Comey about the Flynn probe and shutting that down. We don't know exactly where that came from, if Comey was actually involved in that. But Comey has a reason to want to save his reputation, and his reputation in many ways is being impugned by the president. So I think we'll probably see some of this information get out there in one form or another. But it is a bit of a delicate dance, given that the conversations were between him and a president, and those conversations are generally considered privileged.
Hmm. Well, I suppose he wants to protect his reputation, but I'd also like to think he'd be motivated by just getting the truth out there. And if the president said to him, can you help me out on this, then I think, you know, if the president said, can't you let it go, I do think he has an obligation to the truth to get that fact out there, let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, and I've actually talked to somebody about this earlier, a former Justice Department spokesman who I did a lengthy Q&A with. He's not a huge Comey fan, but he does think that Comey is big on integrity and on kind of the rule of law. And so the point that he made was, you know, if Comey thinks that what the president was doing was inappropriate and wrong, he's probably got some kind of a plan in place to right that wrong and to make sure that the integrity of the office of the presidency is withheld. We don't know, upheld rather, not withheld. So we don't know exactly what form that's going to take, exactly how it's going to play out. But there is some thought that that James Comey is kind of a happy warrior when it comes to something like that. And if the White House is going to go to war with him, I think he may well fight back pretty hard.
Okay, we'll pick up the story there then when it gets to that point. Fascinating stuff, and always a pleasure to read you and also talk to you, Aaron. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Aaron Blake is a correspondent to the Washington Post. Anna DeVantis is in our studio. Anna, nice to see you. Welcome
to
the show.
Good to see you, John. And Rokhan is here, too.
I am? Yes.
Yes, he is.
Yes, I am. I'm watching the Dow right now.
I wasn't
now.
Sure if he was here. That's why.
Well, here, and here. Totally separate kind of thing.
No, 350 was the last number I think Steve threw out.
364, down 364. We're trying
close
to get it not to go to 400.
Yeah.
And I was just saying in the green room, it's like that scene from It's a Wonderful Life where George Bailey's just waiting for the 4 o'clock to hit on the clock so he can close the savings and loans so there isn't a run. And even though this is, you know, 1.75% drop.
And the Dow is up 5,
you know,
since the election.
Right, exactly. This doesn't, you know, begin to mitigate the loss, you know, the gains that have been made here since January 20th. The problem I think you're starting to see, and Susie Sunshine's going to join us from Dallas coming up in a few minutes here to talk about what this all means, because it seems like the consensus is that now that earnings season is over and things have been very, very good and there's competitive pricing in the market, now they're looking at Washington, and there is some real concern about whether or not the president's broader economic agenda, the Republican broader economic agenda, can actually get done. And that's where this is. Alan Dershowitz is going to join us too in the 3 o'clock hour.
No kidding.
Talk about whether or not there is, you know, how high does this? So what we know now, how bad is this legally for the president? And then in the 4 o'clock hour, Dick Durbin and Mike Quigley are both calling in to check in with us from Washington about this. And radio legend John Rickards Landecker is here in the 4 o'clock hour, too.
Like
the first 2 hours are action packed and a brand new song from the Roe and Anna Mighty Art Players about what's happened here.
No kidding. And by the way, Rickards truly is his middle name.
Correct.
Right?
That's
mm-hmm.
I mean,
isn't
that really
great?
Is. I mean, I know it's he always perfect. Said that, and I think he said that when he said that, he meant it. But does he really mean that? Is Rickards really his middle name?
I only know as much as I've not seen his birth certificate. I know he was born in Kenya. That's the one thing I know for sure.
Did you check that out?
Yeah.
We'll
and,
ask him that, though, for sure. He's always been known as that. So
you
just
know what?
Sort
actually,
of assume.
I don't want to know if it's not. I want to believe that it is. So.
And Rickards could have been shortened from Rickardowitz or something like that. You know, I mean, that could have been the thing. It might have been a family name. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll ask him.
Sure. It'll be great to see him in the Radio Hall of Fame.
Do a radio show then.